The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Thanks for listening to the Town Hall Review with Hugh Hewitt podcast, bringing to you the best voices on the stories and issues that matter. Helping make it all possible is the generous partnership with the Pepperdine Graduate School of Public Policy. Here's another piece I'll trust you enjoy.
Major General Christopher Donahue, commander of the 82nd Airborne's All-American Division, boarding a C-17 Globemaster at the Hamid Karzai International Airport in Kabul on August 31st, described as the final American paratrooper to depart Afghanistan. But there may be a problem. During the last hours of the evacuation, according to troops under Major General Donahue's command, and documented by photographs and witness statements, Donahue ordered all of the passengers aboard that C-17 transport plane to disembark so he could have a souvenir loaded onto the plane. The souvenir, war trophy, one might say, was an inoperable Taliban-owned Toyota Hilux with a fully operational Russian ZU-23 anti-aircraft autocannon mounted in the bed. Once the Hilux was loaded, passengers were allowed back on the plane, but there wasn't room for as many that were on the plane previously. According to troops at the scene, at least 50 and perhaps as many as 100 people were left at the airport in Kabul to make room for the Hilux.
Oh, that is so sad. What are you going to...
Well, it's more than sad. That's a problem if that's true. Why don't we start there in our larger, as part of our larger discussion about Afghanistan, particularly after all the generals testified before Congress last week. Lieutenant Colonel Jim Carafano joins us now, Vice President of the Catherine and Shelby Cullum Davis Institute for International Studies at the Heritage Foundation, and his latest book, Brutal War, Jungle Fighting in Papua New Guinea, 1942. Jim, thanks for joining us. What of Major General Donovan?
Well, you know, I saw that story on Twitter, and that's the kind of thing where I think we just have to wait for the investigation, the facts to come out. I mean, generals get investigated all the time, usually by the inspector general, and they actually had a special office in the inspector general for investigating generals. So I'm sure if this guy did something wrong, he will, because this is so high profile and the facts are probably pretty easy to prove one way or another.
If what is being alleged is true, that is a major offense, is it not?
Well, yeah, I'm not going to speculate, because let's just see what the facts are and what the context is. But what I think is important about the hearings is, and we didn't actually learn that much, is, and I'm not sure people, there's really kind of two baskets or three baskets of failures. One is what the president did. What the president did was make a lot of really bad decisions that caused a lot of harm and suffering and sacrificed U.S. national interest. That's all on him. And I think even though all the dots weren't necessarily connected in the hearing, I think that's incontrovertible. But the second failure is the generals. And look, everybody understands that you want to be able for the president and his military advisors to speak in trust and confidence. We get that, right? So they can be frank and candid and everything else. But on the other side, what they are not there to do is essentially to provide political cover for the president and his political decisions. And I really think they failed to do that balance in the hearings and just in general. I don't think they're competent. I don't think they've served this country well. And I don't think they helped the American people really understand what happened in Afghanistan.
Well, General McKinsey said that he advised President Biden to leave 2,500 troops in Afghanistan. Biden doesn't recall that. So either they're lying under oath or Biden's lying. Who is it?
Yeah, and that's the kind of thing, the kind of evidence we really didn't get in the hearing is we really don't have a timeline. We really don't have the context. We really don't have who talked to who when. So we really don't have the connect the dots to really, you know, demonstrate. Because they could say, well, I told the president. Well, I didn't tell the president. I told the SecDef and the so who knows, right? But, and that's the third failure, which is, look, the Congress really failed to do its job. These hearings did not, you know, did not provide the kind of evidence to really understand what happened, why it happened, you know, where we are and where we go from here. I really do think we need an independent commission for that. But, you know, there was bipartisan kind of frustration with what happened in Afghanistan, but there was very, very partisan efforts to kind of put accountability. And the result of that is we never really got to, well, here's exactly what happened. Here's the timeline. Here's the context of all the conversations. And so there's a lot that was left unsaid.
Well, I agree with all of that regarding the postmortem. But then there's also the urgency of now, to borrow a favorite phrase of the left. And the now is, do we yet have a handle on Americans trying to get out, legal permanent residents trying to get out, Afghan allies that we want to extract? Do we have a handle on what those numbers are and how we're doing?
No, and it seems that the administration's priority in a lot of their crisis management was not about addressing the issue, but kind of getting it off the news cycle so they could go back to focusing on their domestic agenda. I mean, I talk to other governments. I talk to people doing this on the ground. The U.S. government still doesn't really have a coherent strategy. They don't have a coherent effort. It does appear that they're continuing to talk to the Taliban, and I think they are cutting deals with the Taliban. But we don't know what kind of deals they're cutting. We don't know what kind of money is being transferred. And we don't know what they're really doing. And I think at this point, even they understand that the Taliban are not redeemable. But they're just trying to buy enough Taliban cooperation to push this problem down the road a bit.
Is there, to your knowledge, are there still private missions happening? And if so, are they getting cooperation from the State Department?
Well, there's absolutely private efforts going on. There's several underground railroads in operation. It's kind of a race between the Taliban shutting them down and those guys getting people out. They're largely funded by private sector people, and there's bribes and stuff like that involved.
Sure.
But the U.S. government doesn't appear to be the big player here.
But I mean, Well, right. I mean, they don't need to be a big player. They just need to let maybe some of these special ops retirees and others involved in these private missions that when they were being more public a few weeks ago, do what they do and don't get in their way if they can get people out who need to get out for fear of their life. And that sort of leads to my other question, too, in terms of if you have an American, a legal permanent resident, Afghan allies murdered because of who they are we even going to hear about it here?
Well, we might or might not, but I think that that's a big part of the problem. And one of the reasons why this never gets off the news cycle for the administration, which is American hostages are going to become really a coin of the realm. As it's readily apparent that cooperation between the Taliban and Americans and the West isn't really going to work, the value of hostages and hostage taking and trading for things is going to become more important for the Taliban and others. So I think that there's every expectation that, you know, we could see something like that in the future. You know, we just had this story where, you know, Iran asked for $10 billion just to begin the talks with the United States. Look, this isn't a disparagement on culture in that part of the world, but this is the way these people do things. They're very, very transactional, and they trade for things. And if you're going to trade for something, you have to have something to trade. So there's a lot of value in hostage taking, and I still think that's a real possibility.
With respect to China, like scaling up our enemies here, those fighter jets that were over Taiwan over the weekend as, you know, another provocation, another example of saber rattling by the Chi-Coms. You know, what are we to make of their posture with the United States as it relates to Taiwan against the backdrop of what we were just discussing with Afghanistan and with Iran?
Yeah, well, it's really hard to tell from the overflights. Well, I mean, obviously they're for intimidation, and you could say, well, you know, also if you were going to do a precursor to an activity, you would do stuff like the Russians do this all the time. You do exercises, and then one day you just show up and don't leave. So could there be a bit of both in this? And the answer is, you know, sure, absolutely. You know, China's not having a good day right now. They've got internal economic issues. They've got real energy shortages. You know, the kind of the trite line that, you know, external events, you know, trying to use distract from things, and that could be a possibility as well. So it's a real issue. I will say, you know, one of the areas where this administration is actually pretty good is in making reassurances to the Chinese, and I mean to the Taiwanese. And I really do think we have to double down on that. I really think is when the Chinese get aggressive like this, if you back off, that's the worst possible message. When you double down, the Chinese know you're serious, and that raises the stakes for them as well.
And don't, I mean, another reason why we shouldn't send American athletes to the Beijing Winter Olympics, which are in a few months.
Yeah, you, well, you know, it's interesting. I just saw some reporting on it, and I think the Chinese are being very court, because now they're talking about greatly restricting, you know, yeah, foreign visitors to the game. And the, you know, one obvious reason for that is, well, that diminishes the value of boycotts, right? If mm-hmm. if foreign people and dignitaries can't come to the games, and the Chinese, you know, aren't embarrassed by the boycotts. So I don't think anybody is going to be up for an athlete boycott of the Olympic Games. But, you know, look, I mean, I think the issue with China just gets bigger and bigger and bigger every day. And if I would fault the administration, among the other things I would really fault for them, is they're behind the American people on this issue. And the American people want, you know, substantive action. Actually, today, we're likely to get the U.S. economic plan, the trade plan for dealing with China. And actually, most of the reporting suggests it's going to look kind of more like the Biden trade plan, which is kind of following with the threat of tariffs and other things, which is,
you mean, you the know, Trump, the Trump trade
quo.
Plan.
Yeah, the Trump. Right. Yeah. Sorry. And that's kind of the status quo, is people are looking, well, where's your plan? How are we moving forward on China from this administration? And we're not getting that.
Well, and one particular asset of Taiwan, and potentially under threat by the Chinese communists, against the backdrop of a semiconductor chip shortage in this world right now, with automobiles and all electronics, you've got Taiwan Semiconductor, which is the largest semiconductor chip manufacturer in the world, and what the Chinese communists could potentially do to make the supply of chips in the United States even slower than it is at present.
Yeah, and I think, you know, that's one reason why we're looking at diversity, and I think there's going to be a lot of movement and cooperation on that. But it's also another reason why you really want to double down on your support of Taiwan. I mean, I think that level of overflight, actually, you know, we got a statement from the State Department and kind of finger waving, wasn't even signed by Blinken, I believe. That level of military activity really kind of calls for a U.S. response. It's not inappropriate for something like that to send a U.S. carrier over there. That just sends the kind of signal that shows we're really serious.
He is Lieutenant Colonel Jim Carafano, Vice President, Catherine Shelby Cullum Davis Institute for International Studies at the Heritage Foundation. The book, Brutal War, Jungle Fighting in Papua New Guinea, 1942. Jim, thanks as always.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Thanks for listening to the Town Hall Review. Our program is coming today in partnership with the Pepperdine Graduate School of Public Policy. It's America's most unique graduate leadership program offered on Pepperdine's breathtaking campus in Malibu, California. Learn more at publicpolicy.pepperdine.edu. If you're enjoying the podcast, please tell a friend to go to Town Hall Review and sign up as well today.
This is Carol Platt-Liebau for townhall.com. In Joe Biden's newest assault on Americans' privacy, he's proposing that banks be required to give the IRS information for all accounts holding more than $600. The policy is supposed to reveal tax dodging by the wealthy. But banks are already required to report transactions of $10,000 or more. It's hard to imagine how dropping the threshold all the way down to $600 is going to ensnare the rich. Instead, it will just allow vast data collection on everyone. And the IRS hasn't shown it can be trusted. Earlier this year, IRS data on thousands of taxpayers was leaked to the ProPublica website and then published. That's not all. Remember the Lois Lerner scandal during the Obama years, when some organizations were targeted just because those in charge of the IRS disagreed with their politics? I don't want to be audited for saying this, but until the IRS has shown it won't abuse our trust, it's a terrible mistake to give it any more power over Americans' lives. I'm Carol Platt-Liebau.
The Pepperdine School of Public Policy, America's unique graduate program for leaders. Learn more at publicpolicy.pepperdine.edu.
3-star general Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.